Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and more special than the rest of us. In other words, amateurs.
It's Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled, drama queen victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills, and are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hey, Lou.
Amateur Nation. It's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Welcome to episode 86, Amateurs, the New Abnormal. Take advantage of the 45% off the download price of my book on Amazon, and if you like the podcast, you'll love the book, and vice versa. Hope all my listeners are healthy and happy, and most importantly, keeping it together mentally, just as important during quarantine. Also, a reminder that I have preview videos of every episode of Amateur Nation, so let's just say you're new to the game here, you're new to my show, and you feel like, well, I don't want to start from number one. Yeah, you can pick and choose the one you like. Pick and choose the episode you want to hear based on the topics, and in 60 seconds, you'll get a video preview so you can see what each episode is about. Lots of other fun clips on my YouTube page as well, so please subscribe to my YouTube channel. Just click on my link to YouTube from my website, lousantini.com. Here's what's happening in Amateur Nation. Topic number one. I am taking a deep breath before I do this topic because I'm not going to lie. With each passing day, I have good days and bad like everybody. And of course, there's always someone who has it worse. I'm not talking about just financially, maybe physically, mental health-wise. You're separated from family. I do understand that. You know what? I'm not even going to insult your intelligence by saying I understand that if you have it way worse than I do. I'm simply talking about my situation here as someone who lives alone with no pets and has not been in face-to-face contact with, what, two people in the last 40 days or more by the time this podcast episode airs, okay? So there are certain days, and I've talked to many of my friends on the phone and via text about this, where you wake up pissed. I can't remember the last time that ever happened to me, where you're waking up, and I remember a couple days ago, I remember I kicked off the covers, and my first words were, ah, shit. That's not normal. And I need to be more mentally tough, you know? I mean, I'm exercising 6 days a week, jumping rope, writing this podcast, post-production, previews, promos, in case you missed it, writing jokes, still keeping my administrative duties going with my entertainment career, the occasional voiceover audition, an on-camera audition that I had to record here at home, and of course, day-to-day stuff, groceries, cleaning, vacuuming, emptying the dishwasher, preparing meals, taking walks, trying to be sociable, always trying to be positive. But let's just face it, it's okay to sometimes wake up and your first thought was, ah, shit. Today is one of those days, recording this podcast. I will try not to let it affect my work, of course. In fact, I won't try. I will not let it affect my work, but I'm warning you in advance, this episode is rated EB for extra bile. All right? I'm aggravated today. So, as always, I refuse to discuss politics on my show. There are thousands, tens of thousands of podcasts to discuss politics. I'm not that guy. There are countless news agencies and websites that discuss politics, political opinion, political views. I'm not that guy. However, it seems that regardless of the content, whether it's political, social, sexual, Hollywood gossip, sports news, you name it, the MO with amateurs on social media is as follows. It's four easy steps. Number one, quickly glance at an alarming article, whether it's positive or negative. It could be an article about the doom and gloom of the coronavirus. It could be a happy article about how puppies can cure cancer. Number two, copy said article. Number three, paste said article. Number four, and this is the most important one, amateurs, spend more time writing your caption for the article and your comments than you did actually reading it, researching it, and or confirming it. This goes for good or bad news regarding any information about and during the pandemic. And that has always been what is wrong with amateurs. Oh my God, look at this headline. Copy, paste, send, post. With no regards to check to see, is it fake news? Is it clickbait? Is it an opinion piece? Is it facts? And if so, what is the source? Just look at me. Look what I did that shows that I'm following said event. I'm not doing anything about it. I'm not questioning anything. Just letting you know that I saw it. I'm not even following it. I don't know the details of this story. Whether it's the pandemic, pick anything. Like I said, the NBA Finals. Who Jennifer Lopez is banging and boring with her horrible music this week. Whatever the case. And of course, the pandemic. Just, oh my God, I saw the word coronavirus. Click, copy, paste. And now I make a comment. Look at me. I'm socially aware. Just letting you know I'm following. It's not just the pandemic. It could be whatever the hot topic, be it social, political, sports, crime, religion, you name it. People will comment on it even if they don't care about it or know anything about it or doing anything to change it. They're just letting you know I, as an amateur, see and follow everything that is popular, being negative or positive, just so I can be in the loop. You know what it is? It's the equivalent of, let's say you got a group of four people standing around talking about anything, the weather. It doesn't matter. Up walks the amateur. So what are we talking about here, guys? That's amateurs who read, copy, paste, and comment any headline, but especially during the pandemic. And it's just noise. It's talking to be talking. I always think of Steve Martin in the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when he goes off on John Candy in the hotel room. He goes, here's an idea when you're telling a story. Have a point. You may not agree with everything I say here. You may hate the show. You may be listening to this because you hate it. I would prefer you like it. I'm not the guy who says, well, I don't care if you hate me or like me as long as you listen. No, I want you to like me. And if you hate the show and you hate me, but you still listen anyway, okay, fine. I wish you agreed with me, but I'm not mad that you don't. And besides, I really like to think I don't really say anything on here you could disagree with. Not because I know everything. Far from it. It's because I've always approached everything from the angle of common sense and logic. My book is called Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense. It's the first one. Common sense, manners, and social skills. But without common sense, it's kind of hard to have manners and social skills. Actually, without one, the other two are hard to have. But amateurs, they're just, they know how to make a bad situation worse, don't they? God. Topic number two. Be prepared to smile, even though this is a topic in Amateur Nation, because I'm going to say this sentence. Let's take a break from corona crap for just a bit, shall we? Again, my book is called Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills. 45% off if you download on Amazon right now and through the end of the quarantine. Since the last few episodes have covered a lot of common sense issues, or lack thereof, of course, during the pandemic, and the difference between cautious and irrational, I've covered that as well. I'd like to talk about those last two themes for my book title, Manners and Social Skills. I admit, since people are wearing masks more often and sometimes even rubber gloves in public, I see less examples of people walking and texting in crosswalks, texting and driving, talking on speakerphone while holding it like a pizza in front of their faces. And while I don't miss that one bit, just because I'm pretty doesn't mean I'm stupid. And the second we get the all clear, I expect to see amateurs going right back to all that stupidity and then some, because everyone will be so excited to talk and text. I am hearing excuse me and thank you and please more, as people are making efforts to put others at ease. I think it's less about the manners, and people are saying thank you and excuse me and please more as a way of saying, relax, I'm nervous too, I ain't gonna hurt you. And I'm fine with that. This habit needs to stay. Back when we were free-range people, just before the quarantine, I was at a Thai restaurant with a friend. Three guys, nay, men, easily over 30, were huddled around one phone, speaker on, music blasting from some lame YouTube video. Yeah, they were bigger than me. Yeah, there were three of them. And I tried the stern stare look, since it's a small mom-and-pop Thai restaurant, and I like eating there, and I would like to be allowed to come back, so I didn't want to make a scene. I gave him a second look, this time a little more stern. Not because I'm trying to threaten them, because I'm trying to send the message like, hey, what are you doing? But of course, when I turned around to talk to my friend, then they got their balls. One of the guys, all I hear from one of the guys, problem? Now we do. Yes, I realize this is how people get killed. But really, I should have to worry about dying because I called out a group of amateurs who don't have the common sense or decency to take it outside in a restaurant that seats maybe 30. So when they said problem, I didn't even turn around. Turning around would have been the big mistake. I just looked straight ahead and said, what do you think? See, this is the restaurant owner's job. Once again, the pros have to come to the rescue of all the other amateurs in the restaurant who aren't saying shit. Restaurant owners, run your business. Throw them out. You got those signs everywhere. We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
Well, unless they could sue us because we don't want any trouble.
Well, then take your sign down, pussies. Run your business. Throw them out. If the customers give you any more shit, call the cops. How hard is that? So these three guys, you know, they flexed and huffed and puffed, and they murmured and left. Problem solved. You're welcome, co-diners. Pros picking up the pieces once again. Now, topic number two, here it is. Speaking of manners, from a website called uproxx.com, UPROXX. Here's an article entitled, Listen, You've Gotta Stop Watching Videos with the Volume On in Public. I like this article for one main reason. The tone of this article is very similar to my book. So it struck a chord with me, and I'm sure you'll nod your head in agreement. As I read it, I'll be commenting when it coincides with what I've been saying in my book and on this show. The article starts off, Welcome to Earth. Right out of the gate. What have I been saying? This is pro world, amateurs. All right, so the article says, Welcome to Earth. Our planet is, for the most part, made up of humans peacefully going about their lives. Yep, talked about that in my book. Most people, I would like to think, are pros. Just trying to do the best we can. The article says, People trying their damnedest to be happy in a world that is alternately beautiful, agonizing, magical, unjust, joy-filled, and plain old messy. At the moment, we're also living in a society. Yes, this is, as I say, people world. The article goes on. In order to coexist without needing a daily version of the purge, we have to honor an unspoken social contract. People despise anyone listening to their phones at full volume in public. How you could argue with that? Good luck, Hoss. How? That's not true. People love hearing other people's shitty music that they don't know while they're trying to eat an expensive meal while on a date or with friends. Doesn't happen. You have no argument, amateurs. The article says it's evidence of horrible short-term thinking because hell hath no fury like someone who is forced to listen to a stupid video of your grandkids while they're trying to enjoy a meal out. Amen. The article goes on. It says, speaking from my own personal experience, I will tell you that I never had a history of anger or public outbursts, and people watching videos on their phones with the volume on has driven me to both. There was the kid on the plane playing video games whose parents I shamed like an 18th century schoolmarm. There were the teenagers in the coffee shop watching YouTube who I called out as if they were setting fire to a dog. It's everywhere. Every restaurant. Every flight. Every lobby. It's madness. And not the people texting at dinner absolutely cheapens the whole dining experience, but it doesn't directly affect me so I can just shrug it off type of madness. This is, why am I listening to you watch clips of New Girl in a freaking restaurant type of madness. Taking part in this behavior is a willingness to take your agenda and impose it on a captive audience of others. Is it something that just has to be accepted? Is it the way our world is? The article says no, period. There's still time for society to insist that headphones are part of the social contract. Because this is the sort of selfishness that's pushing us towards the apocalypse. And when that day comes, people who watch videos with the volume on in public will be the same ones who start hunting animals for meat. They don't care about you. They only care about themselves. They are the takers. You may think that that's an exaggeration, but it's not. The same people who watch videos on speakerphone are hoarding. They have your toilet paper. So they must be stopped. And if you're one of them, you must be stopped. Because this foul habit is a plague, and society can only thrive if we eradicate it. I don't think I can comment on that further. Topic number three. During these uncertain times, yeah, I don't understand why commercials keep saying that. How are they uncertain? We know exactly what the fuck is going on. We're being forced inside. We don't know how, what, that's the uncertainty? When will this end? Then stop fucking reminding us, okay? You're just making us more hostile. You're just reinforcing that panic, that fear, that scared. Don't fall for it, folks. It's inconvenient. It's sad. It's unhealthy right now. It's a little bit dangerous. But don't buy into that. Well, these times are uncertain. You keep telling yourself that. How often have you heard, boy, you know, with the economy the way it is, I've been hearing that my entire life. Have we ever had one good goddamn day of the economy since the beginning of time? Yes. But no, there's no money in hearing that. There's no money to be made in that fear propagating. I'm being facetious here, but I'm saying during these uncertain times, but they're telling us that unless you have a physical disability right now, you should avoid elevators. That makes sense. Enclosed area, everyone's touching the buttons. Why you can't hit the button with your elbow, your foot, your knuckle, a gloved hand, wash your hand. Who's touching the elevator buttons and licking their fingers clean? I'm just going to ride this elevator with my bucket of fried chicken and hit all the buttons. What are you, an idiot? I've often said how I'll never understand how amateurs cannot figure out how to board an elevator. Amateurs hate to wait because, like all things, they want it now. And they'll enter an elevator before the doors even finish opening, even if 50 people on fire are exiting. I've compared this to the idea of filling up a glass of water that is already full. Amateurs get on elevator like it's the last elevator of all time, and this is their last chance to get on it. And wherever they're going on that elevator, that's where they are staying for the rest of their lives, so they gotta get on that fucking elevator right now. So, thus, from Inclinator.com, the seven rules of elevator etiquette. Once this is over, should you decide to ride an elevator like a free-range human, here you go. Number one, follow the two-flight rule. If you're going fewer than two floors up or down, take the stairs. Now look, I've actually never heard of that. I have no problem with that. It makes sense. Unless, of course, you have a physical ailment that prevents you from taking stairs. Number two, if you're alone on the elevator, hold the door for someone. Adoy. When you're riding with others, consider getting a quick thought on whether you should hold it. I don't know how that works. You know, you're on an elevator with what? Let's just say five other people. Someone's running towards the door. The doors start to shut. I'm supposed to take a survey. What do you think? Should I hold the elevator for this guy? I don't know. He looks kind of shady. No, I say let him in. Let's take a vote. And who, I guess the person standing closest to the button makes the executive decision? Anyway, the article says if the elevator is full, on the other hand, there's no shame in giving an apologetic expression and letting the doors close. I guess we all have to go home and work on our, I'm sorry the doors are closing on you, apologetic expression face. Well, what are you going to do? the equivalent of the shrugging shoulders emoticon emoji. Number three, keep proxemics in mind when positioning yourself in an elevator. Again, do you have to be told this? The article says if there are only two people in the elevator, stand on opposite sides of the car. Well, I would hope so. What, there's two of you, you're going to be like, you know, crotch to ass with this guy? The article says three to four people should gravitate towards the corners. Five or more should attempt to space themselves out evenly and face forward. Who's facing backwards in an elevator? First time I saw someone looking backwards like at the end of the Blair Witch Project, I think we're all going to die anyway. Arms and hands should be kept at the sides to avoid contact. Yeah, bust out the jumping jacks. I think I'll just start spinning in a circle with my arms out. I mean, look, I'm mentioning these are for the amateurs, but it pains me that this article had to be written. Number four, elevator etiquette, in case you just joined us. Always face the elevator doors. If you're entering a crowded elevator with three or more riders, it's always best to face the doors. Entering the elevator and staring into the face of someone can be uncomfortable, awkward, and even creepy. Also a great way to get your ass kicked. Sit there and eyeball someone nose to nose like two boxers squaring off at the weigh-in. I almost want to try that. Oh, I'm losing it. I'm totally fucking losing it, everybody. Number five, minimal eye contact is standard. Sometimes you can't help but make a little eye contact, and getting on the elevator doesn't have to be a completely awkward and detached experience. Brief eye contact and a nod or smile is usually well-received by your fellow riders, so long as you turn your focus to anything else in the elevator once you're on board. Number six, this is a big one. I don't know why people don't observe this. Keep phone calls private. The second I walk towards an elevator, I just reach my pocket, I turn that ringer off. I can go 15, 30, however long that elevator ride is, without worrying about missing a phone call. That's why we have voicemail, amateurs. It says, keeping your cell phone holstered in a pocket or sticking to text is common courtesy in an elevator. If you're on a call with someone as you approach an elevator, tell them you'll call them right back. Not to mention, often you're going to lose the call anyway. Similarly, if you receive a call in the elevator, you can answer and give them the same message or decline and text them back that you've returned their call ASAP. No, don't even answer it. You just hit that little button that turns off the ring. It'll go right to voicemail. What is the big problem? All of a sudden now, it's amazing how people, use voicemail. Someone wants to talk to you, you got nothing going on, just let it go to voicemail. I don't feel like talking to them right now. But you're on an elevator? Look, I'm important. I'm making deals right now. And number seven, how to exit when the elevator is full. Hang on a second, let me take my pants off and get ready for this part. The article says when the elevator is packed, the two standing closest to the door should step out at any requested stops to allow folks in the back to exit without requiring them to squeeze themselves out. When you step out of the elevator to make room for those leaving, be considerate and hold the doors to make re-entry smooth. If you're the one exiting, it's best to give the others a warning by saying something like, "My stop is next," or "The next floor is my stop." This gives them time to adjust spacing and the chance to step out and give you ample room to exit. On a similar note, when boarding a full elevator, give those inside the first chance to exit before making your way inside. Has orgasm, lights cigarette, exhales. Time now for 60 seconds. Start the timer, please. I thought about this. When someone does something stupid, and then the other person nearby says, "Oh, bless his heart." Am I the only one hearing? Yeah, what a fucking idiot. Every time I look, "Oh, bless her heart. Oh, bless his heart. God bless that person." They really want to say, "Yeah, this person's a fucking moron, but I'm going to take the high road. Good for you, but I'm not that guy." Thanks to the quarantine, it's normal to cry the day before you have to go grocery shopping, right? You're bored and tired of being quarantined? Hey, it could be worse. We could be turning the clocks back 1 hour tonight. I wish there were more ads for home gym equipment on Facebook. I was at my grocery store, and one of the guys who I always see working there, nice guy, he was stocking the shelves, the bread aisle. He's wearing his mask, his gloves, and I, of course, the same. He says, "How you doing, sir?" And I didn't answer right away. I paused. I just said, "Weird." He was so used to everyone saying, "Hanging in there," that it took a few seconds, and he said, "I like that." And after a few minutes of pleasant conversation, I left, and he said, "Stay safe." And I replied, "Nope." He laughed and said, "Man, that was the laugh I needed today." I like to think those unpredictable answers had more of an impact than the pre-programmed answers everyone else is doing. Time now for three pro things. Three things that are done right. Three notes of positivity that hopefully will put a smile on your face and warm the cockles in your heart. Number one. I know this is weird, but I was just talking about talking to the guy at the bread aisle at the grocery store. Number one pro thing, all natural Jif peanut butter. I know this is a weird thing to have a food recommendation on the list, but since the quarantine, of course, we're not always able to buy certain foods or even the brands of foods that we like. I have been a Jif man since birth. Always smooth, never crunchy. What am I, a communist? Anyway, they did not have regular Jif peanut butter in stock. I'm like, nope, I ain't doing Peter Pan. I'm not doing an off-brand. I want Jif. Oh, well, I don't have it. I'll live without it. But I did see they had all-natural Jif. Usually when you buy all-natural peanut butter or almond butter, there's this disgusting puddle of pus at the top that you have to stir in. This is not the case with all-natural Jif. It is smooth peanut butter, and it's low in sodium. Not that I worry about sodium. But it is the best peanut butter I've ever had. I will never go back to regular Jif again. I'm still a Jif man. Still a Jif man. But I'm going with the all-natural. Try it. Smoother, too. Way better. Number two. And, of course, we all are trapped inside, and we're not free-range people just yet, so here's a TV pick for you. The documentary series Waco on Netflix. Somehow I missed this docuseries when it came out in 2018, but I stumbled upon it last week. It stars Michael Shannon, who got an Oscar nomination in Revolutionary Road, which could be in the top five most depressing movies of all time, and was excellent in The Iceman. This time he plays the level-headed FBI negotiator for David Koresh, the leader of the famed Branch Davidian cult played by Taylor Kitsch. Am I saying his name right? Kitsch? Rory Culkin plays David Thibodeau, one of the survivors, and in this time of quarantine where people aren't exactly trusting everything the government tells them, this might get you fired up a little bit. I'm not bringing politics into this show as always, but just giving you fair warning. A quick recap of the series. Here you go. In February 1993, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms raided David Koresh's Branch Davidian compound, which was a small religious community just outside of Waco, Texas, triggering a drawn-out gun battle that killed four ATF agents, six civilians, and wounded dozens more people. After a 51-day standoff, the conflict ended, I'm not spoiling this for you, by the way, when an FBI assault led to a fire that engulfed the compound, killing 76 members of the Branch Davidians, including David Koresh. Told from the perspectives of those who were there, including Chief FBI Negotiator Gary Noesner and survivor David Thibodeau, the six-part scripted series Waco dramatizes one of the most misunderstood stories in American history. Waco on Netflix. Check it out. And number three on Three Pro Things. All right, I'm going to try to get through this one without getting choked up because I sure watered up when I read it. But this is a great story. You're going to love it. Here you go. Your headline from USA Today. Cars line up to celebrate World War II veterans' 101st birthday with a socially distant salute. Look, someone can always have it worse during the pandemic. But the group of people that I worry most about during this time are senior citizens. They don't move as quickly. They live on routine. Some of them have dementia. Not all. I'm not saying just because you're a senior citizen or someone elderly, you're not sharp as a tack. But they're out there. And frankly, there are people who are younger that have the same, have physical and mental disability issues. But I'm always most worried at a time like this for the senior citizens and the elderly. They have earned the right to have it easy. And sadly, I worry that this quarantine and pandemic makes things that much worse for them. Unless you're met with tragedy and die prematurely, we all will be old. Wealth, career, fame, bloodline, none of that prevents the inevitable. Bill Gates will get old. Mark Zuckerberg, old. Me, old. You, old. For amateurs to make fun of not only the old, but anyone older than they are, well, that's just a special kind of despicable in my eyes. And it's also stupid. So you're going to say, you make fun of me because I'm older than you. Oh, I didn't know you found the key to eternal youth. So when I see a story that is good news about someone old who deserves recognition accompanied by a photo with their eyes lighting up, I gotta say, I welled up. Here's the story. Alan Cameron celebrated his 101st birthday in the age of social distancing. That sentence alone makes me sad. Guy's 101. He survives World War II. He survives, you know, the Great Depression. He was a child during World War I, probably. Korea, Vietnam, Watergate, all the Persian Gulf conflicts. Pick one. Recessions, depressions. Anyway, the article says, but the World War II veteran was not alone. Monday, vehicles paraded by Cameron's house to wish him well. His birthday happened to be on April 12th. His daughter, Debbie David, said, he and all of us were surprised. We thought, where are all these cars coming from? Police helped to organize the procession. The Pearl River Fire Department and neighbors participated. Cameron served in France. Then he headed to Germany after the war to help investigate war crimes. He remained in the Army Reserves for years after, retiring as a lieutenant colonel. After the war, Cameron worked in New York City in marketing for brands that no longer exist, his daughter said. Later, he worked as a real estate agent, then brushed up on the court reporting skills he had used in the Army and worked for municipalities. He retired in the early 1980s. Michael Feiner, his neighbor for about 40 years, says he's amazing. He says Cameron has talked little about his service in the war. They're a different generation. He is an unbelievable gentleman. Cameron was originally from California. While stationed at Camp Shanks in New York, waiting to be shipped out, he went to a dance and met Jane Bockett. They knew each other for about a week. David said they then communicated by mail when Cameron was overseas. Cameron vowed to come back when the war was over and marry Jane. And he did. Jane died in 2009. Her husband still resides on Bockett Road, named for her family. Cameron has had his health challenges, but David said her dad is doing well. Nowadays, his walk is up and down the driveway, she said, but Cameron remains active and alert, and he appreciated his neighbor's birthday greetings. All right. Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Go to Amazon to download my book, Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills, or just go to LucyNTD.com where you can find all my social media, links to subscribe to my YouTube page, and you can email me there too. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong, go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a Big Major production.